Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Nintendo!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of May 30th, 2014. I am your host, Jose Otero, and this is a podcast that the cast members are 1 week away, roughly, from E3. So we are all stressed out, and there's so much work to do,
yep.
And we have a lot to talk about. So, to my right, the German wunderkind,
Guten
Per Schneider.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. A lot of stuff.
Lots of crazy stuff this week.
Yeah. You're a little taller, but we're going to talk about that in a minute.
I'm a little taller, yeah.
Also, we have Brian Altano.
I don't have a Italian wunderkin or anything like that.
I was going to call you the... actually, I couldn't come up with a nickname. I had something earlier, but it disappeared.
Thank you for having me.
The Big Brapper.
Really? That's it? The Big Brapper.
There we go.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right. So, Per, why don't you tell the folks why you're just a little bit taller this week than last week?
Still shoes. After 16 years, I've finally quit IGN. No, I'm taking on the role of GM. So, in addition to running the content departments, editorial video, and marketing and product, I've taken on engineering and sales as well.
How do you have more hair than me?
I don't really have more hair. It's just yours is cut shorter. It falls out a lot.
You are You have control of so much right now. There's so much on your plate.
I can totally screw it up.
How do you have time for this?
I don't know. Don't tell anybody.
Well, okay, I just want to clarify for listeners. Does that mean we lose you a little more on this podcast or no?
Hopefully not, right? It depends. It depends on when you do this.
But, well, it's Thursdays from 3:30 to 4:30 in the IGN podcast room.
I mean,
does that need to change?
The good thing is I can make people do stuff for me now.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I can.
You're not forcing a guest on the show.
Yes. Sit in as me.
We get replaced by his kids. We're like, oh,
today
man,
we will feature the following advertisers.
Now taking on the role of pair. All right, cool.
Well congrats, man.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I'm side note, I wanted to tell you this personally, but I'll tell you personally on the air. But I'm very honored to work under you.
Aww.
And you're one of the reasons that I wanted this job to begin with. I actually never really wanted this job, but just sort of was offered it, and then I got it. And
forced.
I grew up reading you on reading your reviews and reading your news stories and reading all of your IGN Nintendo, IGN 64 coverage and stuff like that. And when I actually really geeked out the first time I ever met you was 5 years ago. I came into the IGN office and you brought Jessica Chobot into the room and you were teaching her German because she was going to Gamescom and she was going to host the Daily Fix.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like, check this out. I taught Jess German. And I was like, that's the guy from the pointing pictures.
Oh, man. That was the excited reaction guy. I remember that. Jess, we announced IGN Germany there.
Yeah.
So yeah. Jess had to learn a couple of lines in German, and it was hilarious.
Yeah. You were
a
strict German teacher?
It was very funny.
Yeah.
Because instead of tschüss, which means goodbye, she said shoes.
I do want to follow up what Brian just said and say to the opposite effect. I did not know a lot about you before 1UP showed up here back in, what was that, 2011. But one of the first things I noticed at the big editorial postmortem is, wow, that guy's really smart. And so I am also honored to be here sharing this podcast with you. Hey, this is the Triforce of Nintendo wisdom at IGN right now. Yeah. So we're really happy to have you here.
Thanks. Let's talk Nintendo.
All right, let's talk Nintendo. So let's start with some news. Apparently...
Time for some news.
Is this going to be... I don't know if I could top that.
Beyond.
No.
That's what they did. That's the... Okay, forget it.
All right, yeah, let's... No. So and our first story is that the big question right now is Pokemon Delta Emerald the next Pokemon remake? So a couple weeks ago, right, Game Freak, the Pokemon company, announced that there were remakes of Ruby and Sapphire being made, right? Omega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire. And that was a big deal. Everyone's excited on 3DS in November. Folks are really happy about that. But there is a third piece to that puzzle, which is Emerald. Pokemon Emerald was it's kind of like Pokemon Yellow, right? It's the third one. It has certain Pokemon in it that maybe the other two don't have. And
it's like Nintendo's Dash End Edition.
Yeah. And so website Gematsu reported that there was a trademark submitted earlier this month that went public today. And so the question is this going to be also another Pokemon remake? Will there be a third one? So for context, before you guys weigh in, Pokemon Fire Red and Leaf Green were remakes, and Game Freak and Pokemon Company decided not to remake Pokemon Yellow. First thing. Second thing happened. It happened one other time when they remade Heart Gold and Soul Silver on DS. They did not also remake the updated Pokemon Crystal. So, what do you guys think? Is Pokemon Delta Emerald a thing?
It's a good question. I feel like you can never really predict where they're going to go with this. Just because they haven't done it a couple of times doesn't mean they're not going to do it now. You know, especially when they're looking at 3DS not doing quite as well as they were hoping to, right? I mean, it's a very successful system out there, and Pokemon games sell really well. They may just say, "Hey, let's do another release because we have too much of a gap before the next, the next Pokemon game or the next 3DS title."
Yeah,
I could see it happening.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, you don't want to throw everything in the book at the wall to see what sticks. But I do think that. Putting out a Pokemon game in the gap between the next one is good to get people to keep people associated with this is their Pokemon system.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. I think they're probably going to start looking at their other IPs and quality of life stuff to keep that going. But Yeah, like you said,
Cat Mario's not dead. What are you doing?
Oh,
there. If you're a listener, Mario is now carrying Cat Mario. Yeah, you're not seeing this,
which is not canon.
But isn't also? I mean, it feels like we're restarting Pokemon on the 3DS because you couldn't transfer a lot of the old Pokemon over, right? Like you couldn't do the one for one transfer with a lot of games over, and so maybe they're just kind of creating more of a baseline to get you more Pokemon like you were able to have on the older games.
So I don't think they're gonna remake a third one. Nope. I think it's just sort of register the trademark, maybe not. But I will say this. I have a pie in the sky idea that will never happen. Do you guys want to hear it?
Is it the iOS Pokemon game?
No, it is not. My pie in the sky idea is that if Delta Emerald is a thing, I would love if it was a Wii U game.
Oh.
Now, I think that for years, right, Pokemon Company has said, and Nintendo has said, or both of them, that Pokemon is a dedicated gaming portable like game, like a handheld game, 3DS, DS, whatever the system is, that's where Pokemon should be.
They actually laughed once when we asked about
really.
Console
Pokemon.
The designer thought it was a ridiculous question.
Why?
Like, why on a console? He's like, no, it's a handheld game.
What?
Because I think when they plan the game, that is at the very top is go out and meet somebody. That was probably at the very top of the list.
But here's my counter to that. So that made sense for a very long time.
Different times now.
But now, with the way Pokemon X and Y use the internet, this isn't an age anymore where you need link cables and you need to go meet someone. You can do global trading. You can do battles. You can do wonder trading. There are so many different factors to Pokemon now that are all part of online. And you are actually never alone as long as you're connected to the internet playing Pokemon. So now feels like the right time for that. And I do wish if they were to introduce it, that it would be done in that fashion where maybe – and some folks will probably listen to this and say, heresy, I don't want to buy another copy of Pokemon. But think about it. If there is a base game on 3DS that you take out there in the world on your gaming portable, and then at home you have the option of, well, I own this third game that I can then just pull everything into.
You can trade with yourself.
Or just, you know, also resume regular functions or something through that.
So I think that's actually not a bad theory because they've been very vocal on, you know, virtual console and adding handheld games to it. And could this be kind of like a special edition handheld VC game too? You know?
They need reasons to keep Pokemon Bank open.
That's kind of cool.
Quite frankly, too, if they're charging a subscription fee for it, and I think that's one of the reasons why we got those two Pokemon games announced as well. But we'll see.
Not a bad theory.
Sure.
Thank you. But I think it's pie in the sky. I don't think it'll happen, but maybe if you're listening to this and you agree with me, let us know. Email NVC at IGN.com.
Yeah, I don't know if I like fundamentally believe in that ideology that something should only stay on a handheld forever. Like
I
honestly think, like, as someone like me who doesn't really get into the Pokemon games, that, like, I'll play a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
I think a console would be what gets me to do that. Like, I think I would sit down in front of my television and dig into a game that deep. Like, I don't know if I understand why they laughed, but it's like you're missing out on tons of people.
I think they laughed when it was more. It was less internet focused and more.
It was like in 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, I was
going to. I'm just kidding.
You didn't talk to those guys in 2012.
No, it was a while back. But I mean, already people were trading data on consoles, so it's it wasn't a ridiculous question to ask for us.
I think it's a ridiculous assumption to make nowadays that anybody interacts with anybody else. I think most people are just so head down isolated with things. I mean, when I was growing up, like, we did get together with link cables and play, you know, stupid multi-tap Game Boy games and stuff like that. But I think kids now are mostly headphones on and staring at a screen.
Do you ever, like, consciously look at the world and, like, just look at people walking around texting while they're walking? It's so weird. Like, if you had taken footage of a modern day street and put it into an 80s movie, like in a John Hughes movie, it would have been like, oh my god, aliens are here, what have they done with people?
I did that. I take the train and this is a little side trip.
Sure.
Yeah. I take the train into work every single day and I'll randomly look up from my own phone to look down the train line and just be like, I wonder how many people on this train right now are staring at a phone.
Yeah.
And the other day, I saw a guy reading a book, and I was like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Actually, a real book.
Some days I would count. I'd be like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, just because I was bored. Yeah. And I couldn't, like, if I'm standing and I have nothing to do because I don't want to have my phone out the whole time, I just look around and count how many people are looking at screens.
Yeah.
And it is actually really scary.
Yeah.
It's all so, right. I mean, I don't know if it's scary. It's just so different, right?
It's
different.
Like, it's scary to me. Yeah. No one's paying attention. All right. So let's move on. This next story. Wow. So I was weirded out by this.
I like it when Jose gets excited.
I know.
Do you? Good. I get excited.
It's a little bit like Christopher Walken being happy. Wow.
Mario Kart 8 is teaming up with Mercedes Japan for free DLC.
Now, I love it.
Japan-only DLC. Apparently, Mario Kart 8 is going to have a free version of the Mercedes-Benz GLA car. It's used to promote that car, essentially. You should see the video for this ad. It is hilarious. It goes from 8-bit Super Mario Brothers to a sort of ripped, real live-action Mario and the ugliest Goomba I have ever seen.
That Goomba is amazing.
Yeah. More importantly, our UK team followed up with NOE, Nintendo of Europe, and they got this quote from them. They were asking, like, what's the deal? Is this coming to the West or not? And they said, the announcement this time was made by Mercedes-Benz Japan regarding their collaboration in Japan with NCL. And as for the information regarding the distribution of the GLA cart for Mario Kart 8 outside Japan, we will be able to announce in the near future. Nintendo basically said to us. So that's
so that makes
weird.
It sound like it's happening.
That makes it sound like there's something going on. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it does.
Because, I mean, it doesn't happen very often, by the way. It's an ad deal, right? It's
yeah,
an advertising.
Because this morning I was sour.
It's
I was
an like, really?
This is,
yeah, Jose gets angry over free stuff.
I don't
stuff.
Get angry yeah. over yeah. free stuff. Check. I just think when folks say, oh, this is totally fine because it's free. I don't play Mario Kart to race in a Mercedes-Benz
you don't
skin.
Have to.
The concept just seems foreign to me. Give
Stop
me
it.
A
it's...
super wait a minute. Give me a super wacky
it's a foreign car.
Weird, strange. give me a strange thing like the Wiggler to look at or some of the other cars that are in there that they have really cool design and rad ideas. I look at the skin for that car and I just go, why is this here? This doesn't feel like it fits.
It totally
it's,
fits.
But it no, is it silly. It is silly. I think we all
it
agree, right?
Silly.
Like so
of course
a
it's
realistic
silly.
Car brand like that in that game is
you,
silly.
Yeah, but you talked me off the ledge as to yeah, I was a little frustrated
and
this morning.
Let's not forget that one of the Koopa kids is German, so having a Mercedes in there is not a problem.
Ludwig.
Yeah. Ludwig.
Yeah. All right, so help folks understand this. Who
well,
paid,
first of all,
who do you think paid for this?
It's an advertising partnership. Mercedes mm-hmm. absolutely paid for it.
Okay.
And I think as part of the deal, you know, Mario Kart gets integrated into Mercedes ad campaigns in Japan, and so it's, you know... We say one hand washes the other one. What do you guys
right.
say? I scratch my back,
expression.
You
Keep
scratch
going.
Somebody else's back,
yeah.
whatever. Yeah. But it's like they're working together
we
on that.
The same
it's
thing.
Definitely, right. It's definitely Italian. It's not unlike what you've seen in like Splinter Cell where like the phone is branded like BlackBerry
I don't
or
want
whatever,
a Ferrari
right?
In my Mario
but,
Kart,
but,
I don't want any more. I don't want them to bring back the Buick. I
but
don't
I agree
want any
with you. I agree with you that usually the product matches the franchise much better. Even in
yeah.
Pikmin, you had brands in the original. You had brands integrated.
But like Duracell.
That were like
yeah.
Duracell,
but
that made
that
sense.
Fits the concept of what Pikmin was. This doesn't seem like a
but,
fit Mario Kart.
But it's but in the context of Japan, it makes all the sense in the world because you have silly commercials with Schwarzenegger busting out of a vitamin bottle and and Bruce Willis like crawling through ducts and Clooney getting drunk on whiskey, right? Like
yeah.
they have really weird
relaxing
and goofy
times.
Commercials. And so if you watch the commercial, it's not serious. It's not like, you know, everybody drives a Mercedes. It's a freaking weird actor
yeah,
running. Into a,
yeah.
into
a Goomba,
Goomba you know?
I guess folks look at it and go, and by the way, whatever, it's free. I'm have to download it, and I'm not going to.
What a crazy
You're not
bust.
Going to.
No,
oh, he's
going to
die at mine.
I don't want it. I want tracks.
You know it's
going to
be the best
courses.
Car.
If they would have said,
what
here's,
is the big
here's
deal?
This car, and then here's these tracks that we're doing too, I would have been like, great, I'm taking the tracks. I'm good.
Here,
I'll pay for the tracks. I don't want free
so,
stuff that is pointless.
A couple of things here. First of all,
go.
I work with the sales side of IGN a lot, which means that like we do a lot of custom content, branding, stuff that's like brought to you by. All the time you get requests like this, but it's rarely in a position like this. Usually people go, well, don't show our product in a bad way or don't do this and don't do that. Like Mercedes probably has in a lot of movies, they're like, you can't wreck our car.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't do anything crazy to it.
Yeah, that's
in
fine.
Mario Kart, they're like... Throw a banana at it, flip it upside down, light it on fire.
Why
we don't care.
So why are you advocating for me to download it, though?
Because
I think it's not for me.
I think it's just as ridiculous and absurd as every other cart that they have in the game. They have carts that are based that look like real cars. The only thing different, if they put this car in the game and it didn't have the Mercedes logo on the back, you'd be like, that's a cool-looking cart.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like me, I'm going to use the Wiggler. Because that's my favorite car.
Well, your fiance is going to jump in the Mercedes.
But I showed this to my fiance, and she was like, "Oh, that's great. We should. I want to get that." And I was like, "Well, we'll never afford one in real life because I'm not Per Schneider." So, but I think it's great. I think it's free. It's fun. It's stupid. It reminds me of like the Chiquita bananas in Monkey Ball.
That's cute.
You know, like it's just sort of like a little.
I actually think it's more like Beatles and Beetle Adventure Racing.
Yeah,
like
totally.
It's like this, and it's not a traditional Mercedes, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, in Japan, they're trying to appeal to families. I wouldn't be surprised if the commercials in the future didn't have like a special edition Mercedes you can win that has, you know, headrests with screens and a Wii U hooked up or whatever, right? Like, there's going to be some more tie into that. But that car kind of looks cute in the game.
I think it looks really cute.
It's like an SD, like super deformed. Yeah. Version of a Mercedes,
it's totally
right?
super deformed.
So,
and one thing I said this morning that I want to reiterate,
please do,
is that this Mario is a doctor, and that is the car a doctor drives. That's not the car a plumber
this
drives.
This is how you justify this.
This is how that is a doctor who's been doing surgery for years. He's got his own parking spot up front. He pulls up in his Mercedes.
He parks it.
He gets out of that car. That is a doctor's car. Let him flex that doctor money a little bit.
All right, I'm glad you two are gonna have fun with it. And I'm playing up the anger too.
No, again, like, but Piers, you were really angry this morning.
No, I was not. Don't lie.
You refused to download it.
I'm not going to.
He was Taro.
This is now forever a part of Mario Kart canon.
Call me back.
It's part of the experience.
Call me back when it's courses. I want to follow up one really important thing with you guys. So we talked to the director of Mario Kart, Kono-san, Hideki Kono, and we he's the producer on Mario Kart, Hideki Kono, and the director, Kosuke Yabuki. Mm-hmm. And Kono addressed the question, but we asked him, do you have hooks for additional content built into this game? For example, would it be easy for you to add a new character or a new track, or is Mario Kart 8 designed to be a closed experience? This is the answer he gave us. We really don't have anything to announce regarding DLC at this point. We knew that was coming.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, just wait till tomorrow.
With Mario Kart 8, as with the rest of the series, I feel strongly that this is a game with a lot of replay value and a lot of content, and that people can enjoy it, and that people can enjoy that for a long time. I would like to throw the question back at you. Do you think DLC for a game like this would be something the player base would enjoy? Now, I told him yes.
I think it'd be great to have a Mercedes in it, for example.
I did not say that.
You didn't say that?
I told him that new courses or other remade courses, like people see the detail and how gorgeous Mario Kart looks. And I think people would really enjoy seeing certain courses come back in that style, or even see them explore new ideas in like track packs or something.
It's a free Mercedes.
Then
he says to me,
"Well, thank you very much for that feedback. We will take that into consideration." And that was it.
Now, they were being coy.
Yeah.
They were being coy because they were sitting on an announcement with the partnership with Mercedes. Like, seriously, it's silly, right? That answer is silly.
He should have said,
"Oh yeah, absolutely, we can expand this game, but we don't. You know, we're not.
If we don't have like five tracks designed, is a couple of licensed cars, and you don't get tracks. You mean to tell me you're going to be okay with that?
No, of course. I think there need to be new GPs. That'd be great.
Yeah,
yeah.
So wait, but you would be okay with us getting nothing ever again, right?
No, he's not.
No, I want DLC for this.
But what
game.
If they
I
said,
told you
what
guys
if they
before,
said we're never giving up? It is a closed experience, and this is it forever.
Then I'd be fine with that.
But if they go, it is a closed experience plus.
But all you
free
get,
Mercedes,
but
you're like
you
absolutely not. I want everything or nothing.
Not welcome again.
I want courses. When courses come along, I will definitely dial back some of the things I said this morning, but I really think that should be the focus, and that's going to keep people playing Mario Kart. It's not just that the online is really good. Yeah. We've been playing online. The online is great. It's out in Japan. It's out in Europe now. It's about to be on America by the time you listen to this podcast.
I don't get lag. It's
no
great.
No lag. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to extend the life of people playing that game, but you want to keep that going? Throw some tracks out there.
So here's the thing, though. I think, first of all, they're being cautious, right? They're talking to you. They know that anything they say, you're going to turn into a news story with a headline. Nintendo confirmed.
We didn't turn this into a news story because it wasn't a great answer.
Well, so they gave you a bull crap answer, and the next day they announced a Mercedes in the game. But
it wasn't the next day. It was three days later.
Here's the thing. The other thing that I think publishers and developers are really cautious about is the EA effect, right? Where anything you say will be held against you. Like EA saying, "Oh yeah, we've got great plans for like downloadable content in the future." The message that gets repeated online is, EA is going to sell tracks, you know, for extra, and you're not going to get the complete Battlefield experience at launch, right?
That's people's takeaway. That is not the story.
Well, no, but that's. But I think people, I think people are a little bit more cautious about saying, "Oh, absolutely, we're going to have day one DLC."
Wait a minute. I have a counter to that because then you have a game like Hyrule Warriors that it says DLC right on the website. They haven't announced anything, but there is a tab for DLC.
That's the least of that game's problems.
It is, but all I'm saying is the messaging is all over the place, but I agree with what you just said. You do want to manage expectations and not have people run away with crazy theories as to how much you held back from the game.
Right. The gut reaction for most gamers is you shipped an unfinished game and you're piecemealing me content down the line, which in a lot of cases has proven to be true, right? Like, I think a lot of publishers have used
When it's on the disc.
Right, and they've used the DLC model to sort of mask the fact that they haven't finished their thing yet and they want to, or they maybe held back some. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that. I think most people don't like that, but I think something like the Mercedes cars is no big deal. And I'm going to ask you something, Jose. If we did get a track, a brand new track, but
it had Mercedes signage,
it was the Mercedes Test Factory.
If it was a cool track, I'd deal with that.
Really? That doesn't make any sense at all. Makes no sense at all.
It depends on the track.
So you won't take the car, but you'll take
it depends on how obnoxious the branding is.
It's everywhere. Upside down, too. It's on the ceiling.
It's actually the shape of a star. People get lost in the middle and bump into each other.
We're running away with
this. They replace all the sound effects with "Buy Mercedes."
You drive around the logo. No, I wouldn't be okay with that extreme, but I doubt
Mario goes, "Wahoo!" Brought to you by Mercedes.
No, Mamma Mia. I don't want it.
Brought to you by Mercedes.
We talked about this long enough. Very, very nice.
Brought to you by Mercedes.
I like how you got him completely derailed.
I know, I did.
That's it. That's it. That's
on the road.
That's it for the show today, folks.
We're done with the podcast.
Get the thing.
Next announcement. What I said. Pushmo World announced for Wii U. So this was an early morning announcement like 2 days ago. Yep. 5 a.m. Press release comes in. Yeah, Pushmo World's happening. So what is Pushmo World, you wonder? It is a...
You can tell he was a teacher sometimes.
So on the show, he's like, he's reading my mind.
Can we stay on topic? You guys are killing me right now.
This is the topic.
We were off topic enough times. Stay with me here.
Brought to you. Bye.
It'll be available for Wii U eShop worldwide on June 19th. The game's going to cost $10. You're going to have 250 puzzles to solve. And just like prior Pushmo, Crashmo, you can create your own puzzle configurations in whatever shape, hopefully not phallic, that you like. And you can share them either through via QR codes or through the Pushmo World Fair, social hub that connects to the game's Miiverse community.
Jose, you asked the question, what is Pushmo? You did not answer that question. What is Pushmo?
It's a block-solving game that's really fun that has it's sort of based on Japanese sumo, right? The main character looks like he's wearing the diaper, and he's pushing blocks back and forth, and you're trying to get to an objective. Usually you're saving children, I think, like so kind of like kids trapped on top of things.
It's a block game, but it's not like a falling block game like Tetris, right?
Well, it is in Crash Mo. It's not in Push Mo.
But you're basically building a three-dimensional staircase or pyramid to get to the top of the goal, which is at the top of the stack of blocks. And the blocks are always shaped like iconic Nintendo characters or weird animals.
In some cases,
And
you're extruding or you're pushing back
so
in.
So the game
right?
worked really well on the 3DS because of the 3D. It's one of those few games where I always kept a 3D effect on because I actually liked being able to look at something.
Well, it's really subtle, too. Yeah, it's very subtle. Quite as obnoxious as maybe other games push 3D.
So it kind of remains to be seen how that's going to play out on the Wii U. I think it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to mention about Pushmo is, for me at least, it is excruciatingly difficult.
That game
makes me feel so, it questions my intelligence. I feel like an idiot playing that game.
Really?
I'm like, I gotta get to the top of this block and I don't know what are the push.
My 7-year-old really likes it but says it's so easy.
Okay, you know, we get it that your kids are smarter than your parents. It's a running theme on the show.
I think he feels he's old.
Thank you. I hear you. It gets harder and harder obviously after a while.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not that hard.
All right, whatever. All
right. You get silent and just doesn't talk the rest of the podcast.
It's a world of Pushmo.
Yeah, but I think that's great. I mean, it's a new title in one of the newer Nintendo franchises. Yep. You know, not that many people know it because it's never been released as a disc they don't make as big of a deal about it. But it was a new franchise that Nintendo released fairly recently, and it's good to see them iterate on it for the third time now.
The custom puzzle stuff's really cool.
Yeah.
I urge everybody, if you're looking for a good puzzle game for Wii U, $10 for this thing is a steal.
They're good. I would wish they would give me more Picross. Like, I really like Picross games.
Yeah, Picross
and I wish those could come back.
Have you not played the e-Picross games? They've had some downloadable ones.
Yeah, the little
try
yeah.
those. Yeah,
that's right.
All right. Just saying. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, that's enough of that. Last story really fast. So, Per, I hope you can help explain this one because I'm still a little all over the place about it. And I know some folks who listen to the show, this is a very big deal. So Nintendo announced an affiliate program for YouTube Let's Play creators, all right, for Mario Kart 8.
Yes.
So it turns out that they're introducing an ad revenue sharing program, which will entitle proactive creators, proactive in quotes, of YouTube Let's Play videos to basically get a share of the ad money, the ad revenue.
Yeah.
So Nintendo is essentially, if I'm getting this right, claiming the ad revenue on like Mario Kart 8 videos, for example. You can apply for the affiliate program, and if you get permission from Nintendo, you get a piece of the profit next to Nintendo and Google.
It's not what...
Also, the details of how to sign up and when will be announced in the future. This was just an announcement that it exists.
So it's a step in the right direction, but it's not what YouTubers want, right?
Right.
So if you're not familiar with how you make money on YouTube, you put content on your channel, you become a partner, and you monetize the views. YouTube sells your views, and you get a cut of the ad revenue, right? You can sign up with an MCN. That's like a bigger network of sites that affiliate together, and then those guys sell your ads. So actually, IGN used to do that too, right? We had like 20 affiliates, and we would sell the ads. If you don't sell them, then YouTube fills the rest of the inventory, and you get a cut. And the size of the cut depends on how much sold through your pre-roll ad inventory was. Now, what Nintendo's proposing is saying, okay, you sign up with us. And maybe if you're chosen, we will give you a cut of the revenue, but Google still takes half, right? Which means you're not getting what you would have gotten if you created a video of, say, The Elder Scrolls or Titanfall.
Yep.
You're definitely getting less because you chose to cover a Nintendo product.
Nintendo has stepped on Let's Play creators' toes and YouTubers before, where they claimed ad revenue on a bunch of videos a couple years ago, and it angered a lot of people, or at least those people.
So I hope I didn't lose you with the long explanation.
No,
but
the
basic point
context.
Is that you can create YouTube content with games, and the game creators absolutely own the copyright for the content that you're broadcasting. Mm-hmm. You can argue, I'm using the content in a different way, therefore it's fair use, but it's kind of a feeble case, right? Like if EA said, hey, those guys are broadcasting Titanfall, they're not supposed to, YouTube will absolutely let them claim the views, right? But most publishers like it because they see it as marketing. They know a game is not an experience that is just about watching, therefore let people watch it. Maybe they'll love it and they'll buy the game. And so a lot of YouTube creators also see their job as, I'm actually doing them a favor in marketing.
That's right.
It's not as cut and dried as that.
Well,
but
I don't want to justify their actions against YouTubers. So I think it was pretty preposterous. It actually reminded me a lot of the early 80s when they hit hard on the Blockbuster videos and rental services and stuff like that, because they figured that these places were cutting away from their profits.
Yeah, from sales.
But there are a lot of people that don't play video games anymore because of sites like YouTube and Twitch. There are people that just go and watch games. And I don't know if that translates really as much to a game like Mario Kart. I think that's Mario Kart will always sort of be one of those things where you can watch it, it's really fun, but you also have to just kind of play
it. It's a lot more fun to play than to watch,
but
especially
in
a party setting.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I do see justifiably how some publishers are worried. People who make predominantly short single-player campaign games, you can kind of sit down and I'm going to watch Modern Warfare from start to finish in 3 hours, and I'm never going to buy it. I'm never going to play it. So I hear a lot more nowadays from especially people in the YouTube comments and comments on IGN. I'm not going to rent this. I'm just going to watch it on Twitch.
Beyond Two Souls, like games like that where you have like the set storyline and you can watch it and actually enjoy it without playing it, there is definitely risk there. I totally agree. And I don't think it's that big of a deal if a publisher claims the views for the cutscenes, right? Yeah. But when your experience of playing the game is completely different from somebody else, I feel like it's a little bit of a different story, right?
Yeah.
Somebody like a speedrunner or somebody who's amazing at Mario Kart, the content becomes that person's skills or that person's narration. And so that's where I feel like the claiming can be a little odd. And I think this is growing pains for Nintendo, right? Yeah. We talked last week about growing pains in the online market, and this is how they deal with content on the web. And they've gone through the same things with us, with the media, right? Where at one point they said, oh, no, you shouldn't host any of our trailers. Like, okay, are you sure that's a good idea, right?
Yeah.
And so they've dialed back on that kind of stuff as well. I'm curious to see where this goes. I wonder if they are actually liberally claiming all these clips, or if it's just a certain type of content that they object to, more of the kind of like the cutscene and you're giving away the story type deal.
Yeah, and we've seen that happen with Twitch. I don't know if we mentioned it, but on Twitch, if you're streaming certain, you know, PS4, or I think it applies to Xbox One as well, during cutscenes, it basically goes to like a screen where folks can't see what's happening. I don't think they can even hear it, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's just their way of protecting certain things about the game that they just don't want. They would rather people have bought it to experience rather than see that.
Yeah,
so you can't control that on YouTube, by the way, with narrative-based
games. It's what you said. You know, they've been around for so long, and they're sort of like, you know, they're brilliant, but they're also kind of this giant lumbering company.
Yeah.
You know, we've been around for a long time at IGN. I know how sometimes it takes time to get some big decisions moving or something like that.
Or sometimes there's, you know, a Smash Brothers tournament happening at Evo, for example, like a year ago, and then they said, no, you can't have
that. So maybe that's just someone a matter of, like, when I was a kid, I would be like, Dad, can I have $5? And he'd be like, absolutely not. But then like, a couple weeks would go by, and he'd be like, I'd be like, Dad, can I have $5? And he'd be like, yeah, sure. And I would appreciate it more because he said no the first time.
Yeah.
So maybe they do a thing where they shoot things down and they come around and it makes you like them a little better.
On the Evo example, they came around real fast.
Oh,
like within a couple of hours, they were like, sorry, whoops.
And there's actually one scenario where this could be a good thing, right? If Nintendo actually built up a sales force internally, right? They're looking at new ways to make money. Maybe ad sales is one of them, right?
Like the Mercedes thing?
Yeah, maybe. No, they've always had that kind of partnership stuff. But let's say they set up a sales force and they say, okay, we are going to sell sponsorships around people competitively playing Smash Brothers against each other on YouTube. We're going to claim all those views. You can become a partner. But guess what? Our CPM, so the amount of money you make per every 1,000 views, is higher when it runs through Nintendo than when it runs through YouTube general sales, right? Because they're direct selling. So there is a scenario where you might be able to make more money with them than directly through Google. But I just don't see them as being a big media sales team. And let's not forget, Nintendo doesn't want ads for PlayStation and Microsoft games running on their games.
No,
and so that also now will cut into the revenue, because when Nintendo controls that inventory, they're going to limit the types of advertisers that will appear, I assume, right?
Yeah.
Whereas when Google sells it, there's really no limit.
That's right.
And so I think it's 100% bad news for YouTubers. It's good that they're thinking about letting at least people monetize part of the inventory instead of just saying, hey, we're going to turn everything off. But this is not going to work, right? It just means people are going to play fewer Nintendo games on YouTube, and that's probably not a good thing.
Yeah. No, that marketing helps. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, folks. And when we come back, we have a lot to discuss about the Smash Invitational during E3. We are here. I'm Jose Otero with Per Schneider, Ryan Altano.
Hi.
And guys, a bunch of news about the Smash Invitational just happened, right? The roster of all 16 fighters is out there now.
Yeah.
They announced the announcers are out there. Congratulations, by the way, to Winston Proxmith and also to a good friend of the show, Hugo Gonzalez. Awesome peoples. All right. So, they have a host, all that stuff. They announced the rules. And then at the end of the video, they say, and introducing, and then Brian noticed it was like porno music. That's what you said. But more importantly, it was that they announced the existence of a GameCube adapter for Wii U.
Yeah, a GameCube controller adapter for Wii U.
That's right.
Will allow you to plug up to 4 GameCube controllers into an adapter that then plugs into 2 USB slots
at the front,
direct into the front of your Wii U, or the back, if that's your thing. That's all I say.
Thank you made Fozzie Bear. Thank you, Fozzie Bear.
And you can play the upcoming Smash Brothers game for Wii U with GameCube controllers, wired GameCube controllers, and this is a huge, huge deal.
It is.
It's really cool.
We've been talking about it on the show a lot. I think even before Tim made the prediction, by the way, bravo to Tim Geddes. that the new Smash Brothers, how will we control it? Like, on the gamepad, I didn't think – I wasn't convinced. Wii U Pro Controller, not convinced that was going to be a good fit for Smash Brothers either. And I'm sure Sakurai, he's going to make it work, right? He did it with Brawl on the Wii, where it was like, okay, if you held the controller sideways, you can do this. If you have the Wii and Nunchuck, you could do this. If you have a GameCube controller, you can actually play the game the way you should.
Yeah.
But they'll do that again this time around. I think it was a smart move. We don't know price. Here's the things we don't know right now. We don't know how much it's going to cost. We don't know if Nintendo's selling GameCube controllers again or not. In the video and in the photo that they tweeted, they have the picture of a GameCube controller, clearly, but the logo for Nintendo GameCube right over the start button is covered up by the new Smash Brothers logo, the sort of coin that shows up at the start of every Smash Brothers.
So the answer is yes.
So if that doesn't get made, they're the worst.
So we followed up with PR, and they said all we're announcing is what's in the video.
Yeah,
now,
okay.
I think this is an opportunity to sell those controllers. They're going to sell those controllers.
Oh, thank you for noticing. No, we're not ready to talk about that.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah.
There's no Mercedes.
But then, do they come together? Do they come separate?
What do you think they'll charge for this adapter? I don't think they'll go higher than 20.
I hope they don't go higher than 20, but we'll see. You know.
But it's also a niche product, right? Like this is if you're not somebody who cares about this, it's like, you know, in the competitive gaming, you know, every millisecond counts.
Yeah.
And so having a wired controller solution is the only way to play for competitive players. And so there was a lot of worry that the Wii U doesn't have wired controller ports or wired controllers, right?
Yeah.
And so this is a big announcement.
Yep, yep.
I think they're going to sell it separately. I don't think there'll be a bundle unless there's some sort of competition bundle or something. That could be cool.
Yeah. I think there'll be some sort of like a limited edition or collector's bundles, because that's usually stuff the hardcore guys will go after anyway. And there are people who are lining up at the Nintendo World Store in New York City just to get a blue shell in a case.
It's just so weird, though.
Shell in a case.
Well,
how do I get that?
That's the only place you can get it. In the Nintendo World Store.
Here, fly me to the Nintendo World Store
right now.
it's a weird
blue shell.
But if you're going to that store, grab me one of those blue shells, please. Thank you.
So you can use the GameCube controller with other games, or
we don't know. So
they'd have to retrofit everything.
Well,
right?
That's a good question. Right now, it looks like it's only a Smash peripheral. I think it's a smart solution too, because it's not a $150 fight stick like what the other sort of fighting game communities have adopted. Right, where like Capcom, Mad Cats have been making a bundle, and those are great controllers. I have one, by the way. Like, I love it. I'm just not good at that game on that level, but I do enjoy having the tools to try and practice and get in there on that. The only thing, it's a little funny looking, right? Because it plugs into the two USBs in the front, and it's just an extra piece of wiring in the house. But whatever. I don't care. I'll take it. It's not that wired fight pad garbage that we talked about last week that plugged into the Wii remote. I'm sorry.
Well,
I
also think of this
as
not like my Wii U right now has a sensor bar plugged into it and has it's a chocolate stain. And there's the port on the side where I have the dongle where I actually charge my Pro Controller every now and then. And in the back, there's the external hard drive. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot going on there.
It's like a small city.
So this is like, I mean, I rewired my entertainment center recently. I sent a picture to Jose. I'm like, what the hell is this? Yeah, like, what am I supposed to do with
that.
This?
It was really funny.
This, I got a little annoyed at first because I'm like, oh, really? But the two USB ports, one of them is charging the unit. The other one is actually like directing the input. And I'm not going to have this plugged in all the time. This is going to be there when I play Smash.
Yeah.
And, you know, even for me, I'm not a competitive Smash player in that sense. Like,
but you challenged all of them.
I challenged all of them. I'll still whoop your ass.
Oh, man.
No,
did you email all the guys on the list?
I'm working on that.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I have some friends in that community. There are things
but just because
work.
It's not, like, totally something for me, I was a huge, huge GameCube fan growing up. So this is, like, I'm ecstatic for the people who are ecstatic for this. You know, like, I think this is fantastic for the people that really want something like this to happen.
What fan service? I mean, that
is totally.
Like, you couldn't have come up with a better way to do Smash Brothers fan service, to bring back the controller. It's not a special edition controller that is like the classic controller or anything.
Yeah.
It is the GameCube controller.
It's the GameCube controller.
You know, with the weird, it looks like the facehugger from Aliens with the little balls underneath and everything.
It's so strange.
You know?
And I was talking about this with Jose this morning. I think, like, you said something like, you know, I'm so happy they did this. You know, Nintendo kind of has a history of stuff like this. And I was like, well, no, they don't. Because, like, if I'm a big Club Nintendo fan, right? And in Japan, they had the thing where you could get the Famicom controller, the Super Nintendo controller that plugged into your Wii.
Oh, I remember what we were talking about. And we wanted it here
in America for years. Never happened. They never officially released
it. No, but like, Nintendo is the king of recycling, finding ways to either recycle parts of their products or just the whole product itself. And I say this because, and I pointed out this to you, this is super insider info, and either you care about this or you don't. But the Wii Fit Balance Board, right?
Yep.
Some of us either own it or have owned it. The four sensors in that thing that kind of dictate or just kind of handle the body weight. Those parts came from old Nintendo 64 analog stick parts.
Are you serious?
I'm not even kidding. This was a GDC thing a couple of years ago, and I was in the audience like, wow, that's crazy. And I see other products they put out where I'm just like, oh, that looks really similar to X.
Did you know the gamepad is actually made of old Virtual Boys?
No, just shattered and glued together.
That's not true.
It's not true.
Relax.
It's
expensive making factories, right? To set up a factory to create a product and make the plastic casing costs a lot. And so being able to reuse something is smart.
No, they're a smart company that way. I will say this too. I think that this entire tournament in general, the entire thing today was great, like in terms of getting people excited, showing them what's coming up. I think they should have said the price of this thing because you can drop that now. You don't need to waste 2 minutes at E3 telling me how much it's going to cost during the digital event or during any other portion of E3. I also think if Smash Brothers was a 2015 game, today was the day to say it because everyone was happy enough with everything else that you could have gotten away with it. Now, it better come out in 2014 because everyone is really excited and this wave of excitement is going to carry over. You're not going to say at E3, this is a 2015 game. Make sure it happens.
It'd be strange.
And everything comes with it.
Just the presence of the tournament tells me that it can't be that far off. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they'll still do lots of balancing afterwards, and they'll probably get feedback from these pro players, but I got to think it's going to make it.
Yeah, this whole thing and this whole day today was really awesome because it taught me two things. One, again, I'm ecstatic for all the Smash Brothers fans, like the real pro guys, and I'm not that good, and I know I talked smack to them on the show. All of you would kill me. Seriously, you would all whoop my
ass. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll get that done.
Can you do an Up at Noon? Can you do a call out and saying you want to fight me?
Yeah, I would love to.
Can you do that?
I would love to.
And then the next episode, we'll have somebody on.
I want a bunch of the pros to come up in IGN and just whoop my ass all over that game. That would be really funny.
Yeah. You've heard the challenge.
But it shows that they're not. it just shows that they're not messing around with Smash, and I think that's really cool.
It
shows that they're not messing around, and B, it shows that they're listening. They're taking this very seriously.
Yeah, and I feel like the Melee community, especially, has been there for years, promoting this game, and 64 as well. I mean, through the hardware generations, there have been these communities that have been latching. This community is growing that is latching onto Smash. There's even kids who really like Brawl, who are just ecstatic about Brawl, and who are out there evangelizing and promoting it. I'm just glad to see Nintendo finally embrace them because the Earthbound kids have been doing it patiently for years.
Yeah.
And Nintendo didn't really embrace them in that way, but they did eventually put Earthbound out on Wii U, thank God.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Is this a sign of change at Nintendo
where they're now embracing
fans and finding ways to reward fans and do really cool things? Like maybe the Nintendo World Championship is coming back.
It's the dad metaphor I made, right? It's like there's when you're a teenager or you're a kid or you're in college or something like that, your dad's really strict. But when he's like 45, 55 years old, he's just kind of like, do what you want. Have fun. You know?
Sure.
Here, take my car out.
Yeah. I think it started with Evo and the realization that why are we being like this? Where it's not because they didn't want anybody to do a tournament. It's because they couldn't get their legal processes out of the way to be supportive of an event
that.
And they fixed that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you've never watched Evo, it's a ton of fun to see
it
these
is.
Players compete.
Yeah.
You can actually watch if you want to watch some stuff from last year, we have videos on IGN. Just search Evo 2013. You'll be able to watch it on IGN again this year. So it's a really entertaining thing to watch, and I bet you the guys who designed Smash Brothers watch that too.
Yeah.
And so I cannot believe that anybody there would have said, we should not allow them to play our game.
Well, they need to find their way. You're absolutely right. They need to find their way around corporate politics and corporate nonsense and embrace these fan bases that are around them. And they especially need it now when, you know, I was thinking about this and I talked to Brian a little bit earlier about it, where, you know, E3, folks don't know what to expect. the roster of games may be small, it may not.
Yeah.
And you need a way to still maintain attention and be relevant, right? Especially to the people who either bought your game or who are interested in the things you're selling.
Yep.
I think this Smash Brothers tournament is a great way to do that.
Dude,
for
it's
them.
It's a bunch of pro video gamers getting together in a crowded room to play a Nintendo game that isn't out yet, which means this is like Nintendo has finally made a real life version of the movie The Wizard. It's so great.
They wasn't the World Championships The Wizard?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And they were like, and coming up, Mario 3, and everyone in the crowd was like, oh, didn't they make a Mario 3 yet? That's crazy. And people were finding warp whistles before they even knew what to do. We're gonna see that in Smash Brothers. Like, we've never really seen this game like this, and now the best people in the world are gonna bust it wide open for everyone to see.
Yeah, and it's gonna be interesting to see, like, just what they figure out, you know, like the little nuances that they're able to exploit by just playing that game for, you know, a short time.
Yeah, and you're gonna have people that watch it that are cheering for their favorite characters, and people who really watch it that are cheering for their favorite professional Smash Brothers players.
Sure.
I just think it's awesome. It's awesome all around. It's incredibly cool of them to do, and I think it does hopefully begin a new era of Nintendo.
So the GameCube controller adapter, great addition. Everything we heard today, really cool. But you asked a great question earlier at my desk, Brian. You said to me, does this take away from Smash for Wii U? I mean, for 3DS.
Yeah.
Does this make Smash for 3DS seem maybe less attractive or slightly inferior because of this?
Casual version. Nobody's going to play that in a competition, right?
No.
Like, it's...
They're not.
So... It will be a great, responsive, competent game, but like, why would you need to play the handheld version in a competition? I don't think it takes anything away from it, but it's definitely, it makes Smash Brothers on the console the serious competition edition.
And it always was, to be fair, right?
To me, it's like the difference between, it's like watching Iron Man 3 on a plane versus watching it in a movie theater. Like on opening weekend, you know? It's like, well, this will do. I want to kill some time on this flight.
Hey, where's the helicopter crash sequence?
Yeah,
I remember that.
I never told this story. I watched the
you
movie.
You watched Airport?
No, I watched the movie Speed on a plane once.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, at the end of the movie Speed, sorry for the tangent, the bus.
I like how they apologize to me.
The bus goes to the airport and then it crashes into a plane.
Stuff. Yep.
They cut that scene.
Oh,
so the movie, the version
of the
best
part about watching movies on
plane. It's the end of the bus in the movie about a bus. So when I watched the movie on a plane, the bus is just driving, and all of a sudden the bus is not in the movie anymore, and Dennis Hopper is on a train fighting Keanu Reeves.
No, they do that all the time. The airline or airplane edit of movies is really weird. It's actually fascinating.
Should have seen Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
No, they never showed that on the airplane. Oh. Yeah, the movie's 30 seconds long. It's just the runway at
that's
the end.
A mean movie, too.
Yeah, it is.
Mean movie.
All right, enough tangent. Right.
Anyway,
let's get
sorry.
Back on topic.
Tune into our movies podcast.
So,
keeping it real.
I did have one more theory about,
please go
about this thing, and that's that I'm wondering, Nintendo, they're kind of on and off again with this, but they do have this slight history of re-promoting one of their old games to kind of tie together with one of their new games and kind of drum up excitement. They've done it with some Zelda games before where they're like, this one's coming out. Here's one of the games on the virtual console.
Oh, yeah, you know, like with the 25th anniversary for Zelda. And Skyward Sword was on the way, and you got Link's Awakening DX was a thing.
Stuff like
they
that.
Had the four swords for free
so
on DSi.
So I'm wondering if maybe this opens things up to put Smash Brothers Melee out on the Wii U.
Okay.
Now, right. I don't know, and I talked about this with Jose, and I know game...
We're starting fresh.
Okay, we're
ask
starting
the
fresh.
Question.
Do you think that this opens up the chance to put Smash Brothers Melee on Wii U? Now, there's emulation issues, right? There's space issues. GameCube games are like a gig each. Most people only have a few of those on their Wii U.
But you have a hardware solution
if you
want to do the hardware
we've been
thing.
Taught
and it's
to
not
kinda,
useful.
It's not useful, but it's there.
Or it's not, excuse me, it's not elegant. It's useful. It's
I mean,
not
I bought a terabyte hard drive for like $50 when I had the chance.
And then you complained about it to me when you had all these wires. And
it's a lot of wires. It is a lot of wires.
What do you guys think? Yeah.
That's...
I don't think they'll do it.
I think the market for that audience would be people who really cared about how well that game ran, because it is a fast-paced fighter,
amazing.
And I have
still.
I just
today.
Don't have the faith that they can pull it off.
Interesting.
You know?
It's one thing
to have the thing, you know, have things run in GameCube mode, but to actually...
That's the problem, right? Emulation, I think people underestimate how challenging emulation can be, right? You have to have... You're basically fooling a ROM, a game, into thinking it's being played on its hardware, And at the same time, you are essentially like that's not an easy thing to do when the technology around the system that you're trying to emulate is a little more advanced. Now, granted, the Dolphin emulation environment exists, right? Mm-hmm. We've all heard of it. Project Dolphin is a way that folks play either GameCube or I believe even Wii games.
Yeah.
On
no, it's
a
definitely
PC.
it's definitely also
and,
Wii games.
And that's a thing for folks, but. You know, you're dealing with computers that have a lot of hard, like very powerful hardware and can handle that. And they have drivers and things that you can play around with. That's not an elegant solution for a console. So that's why if you look at the current emulation scene for Nintendo, right, the virtual console as it exists is currently NES games, Super Nintendo games, and GBA games, which are some of the easier emulation acts to pull off. So when you say GameCube, I would love to see it, but I just think that would the amount of effort and money it would take to make it work justify the return? I don't think Nintendo would see the value.
No, it's a very fair point. Yeah. I will say, as excited as I am about this GameCube Wii U adapter, if it doesn't lead into some sort of GameCube renaissance of any kind, then I feel it's a
like
huge
that.
Missed
GameCube
opportunity.
Renaissance. I think that's a really good way to put it.
I don't think that this should live and die with Smash Brothers for Wii U. I think you have this thing now. It's this option. Use this as a chance to sort of be like, wait, you never heard of the GameCube before? Well, here's what the controller is. Here's how it interfaces with Smash Brothers. And here's how it interfaces with Super Mario Sunshine and Metroid Prime.
Here's something you can tack onto that then, right? Like take Wind Waker HD, which is an update on a GameCube game. If they do that again, let's say they do that with Super Mario Sunshine, it would be cool if you own that controller already with the adapter that you could then play Sunshine with the controller you did years ago when it came out. That would be a more – I think that's a more plausible solution than, say, virtual console.
I don't buy it that it's going to happen, honestly. I mean, I love the idea. I think this controller is specifically for Smash? Smash Brothers.
And that's okay.
Because think about it. It's not like the controls of the Wii U are so fundamentally different from the GameCube that you require that controller to play an emulated or an up-resed or updated game.
That's
right?
Actually, I would challenge that a little bit.
When you got two Z buttons.
No. When you play certain, when you dip back in time to play a virtual console game, let's say on N64, for example, on the Wii, when you're using the classic controller, either iteration, the Pro or the regular classic controller, it is rough because your entire brain is rewired. You're wired around the original controller the way it was, right? Well, either the strange shape of the Nintendo 64 controller.
For example, I cannot play the Ocarina in Ocarina of Time on a Pro controller the way I could on the N64.
That's what I'm talking about.
I cannot control the
That's a problem.
The camera movement in Mario 64, for example, just running around in that game with the old Bowser Claw N64 controller felt right to me, and maybe I could rewire my brain to do it, but I've tried for years. I mean, Super Mario 64 has been available on the virtual console on the Wii for years now, and I've tried many times to be like, man, I miss Mario 64. Let me give it a shot. It doesn't work.
I just don't know if it's going to happen just technically, but it'd be cool because there are definitely some games that require the squishy triggers, right?
Yeah.
Remember those? There were few, and somebody brought up in a past. Analog triggers. Somebody brought up in a past episode. Will not having analog triggers stand in the way of GameCube virtual console games?
Yeah,
I just haven't seen anything that would lead me to believe that they're doing this.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing it either. I mean, it's awesome. Definitely another like pie in the sky idea. Like when we started the podcast, I was talking about Pokemon Delta Emerald, but. You know, I think we'd appreciate it. I think there is an audience that would appreciate it, but maybe that's not a big enough audience for what Nintendo needs right now. They need success on Wii U. They need that thing to sell. They need to have a lineup of games that people care about.
Well, this is
very low on the list.
But that's where, when I look at the product, I'd say it's a much bigger opportunity for them to have like a Super Mario 3D collection that has like Sunshine, Galaxy 1, and Galaxy 2 up-resed in it, right? Like that to me would be a bigger opportunity.
That's attractive.
Out like that, and they can price that at $60, right?
What makes you think they would do that? I mean, when they did Wind Waker HD as a $60 packaged game, or what was it?
$50
packaged game, you know, on its own, and it probably justified its own bundle and new gamepad imagery. Yeah, and
no,
everything.
True. I was just thinking the other two were more recent.
Yeah, but with Wind Waker, a lot more improvements were there than just graphics, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they completely changed a good percentage of
the game. I would love to meet halfway on that, where they say,
Here is Mario Sunshine. It's on a disc.
Yeah.
We've up-resed it a little bit, and it works with the GameCube controllers, which now work with your Wii U. That's like, if you want that full nostalgia, there it is. Otherwise,
That'd be cool.
You guys are right in that, like, playing something like Smash Brothers where it's choppy and it's not running, that defeats the entire purpose of this whole operation, right, was to get Smash Brothers running every frame perfectly.
Yep.
So I just want more GameCube games on my Wii U.
Same here. No, I'm with you. All right, so let's. So actually, this is great because we've been talking a lot about the controller right now and the adapter. We actually have a question of the week back this week, and this is this one was sort of came up during the Mario Kart 8 live stream, where Greg brought up. Someone asked us what is the best controller for Mario Kart, and we were all kind of saying, they're actually all pretty good.
Yeah.
Because I was winning with the split Wii Remote and Nunchuck, but Brian was playing with the gamepad, but Greg was playing with the Wii U Pro Controller.
Yep.
And then Greg was like, I think the Wii U Pro Controller is the best controller Nintendo has ever made. And I was like, absolutely not. It is not one of the best controllers they've ever made. I think it's one of the most derivative they've ever made.
You actually said, I think you said it was one of the worst.
I believe it's one of the worst as well. But I believe it's because it's so derivative. I own one. More importantly, I do see, though, that the gamepad and the Wii U Pro Controller, they were going for parity, right? That's why the analog sticks are above. Yeah. That's why the buttons are below with the D-pad underneath. But it just does not... It doesn't seem special to me, whereas I look at the GameCube controller, that's special to me. I look at the Super Nintendo controller, that's special to me. I look at the NES controller as someone who had a chance to play games on a Commodore 64 with a joystick. That's special to me.
Sure.
So the question of the week, before you guys weigh in, and you can weigh in with your answers, is what's the best Nintendo controller of all time?
WaveBird.
Yeah.
GameCube WaveBird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
I'm kind of with you on that.
First of all, nostalgia, man. Every other console had wires, and you get this awesome wireless controller that actually worked. It felt good. It wasn't beautiful, right? It looked clunky. It looked like one of the, like, a container ship from Star Wars, where it's like had this giant container sitting on top of a beautiful ship. But I thought that controller was great. I liked the triggers. I actually loved the big A button, too. Like, now when I'm playing Mario Kart, when I'm playing Mario Kart with the Pro Controller, and I think the Pro Controller is absolutely better than whatever you're using, Otero, Mario Kart.
No, I think it's fine. I can race with it. I can whoop anyone in this room with that controller, but it doesn't matter. I don't like it.
That's true. He usually wins. But I love the way the WaveBird felt, and I don't get the thumb blister that I get with the Pro Controller. I actually think they went backwards. With comfort.
And for context for folks, at the time when the WaveBird came out, there were wireless controllers, but they were always made by third parties.
Yeah, yeah.
For the, like, the PlayStation
were Logitech
2
and
the Xbox, and they were terrible. They dropped.
They lost signal all the time.
Yeah, they were just unreliable. And then here comes Nintendo with the WaveBird, and it was a first party wireless controller, and it was great.
Yep.
You were gonna say.
I'm thinking about it a little more. I loved the WaveBird. It was one of the best controllers ever made. It might be my favorite. But I'm not wild about the D-pad on the WaveBird. I think that the D-pad on the GameCube controller in general is very tiny. Yeah. It's kind
that's
of in a weird
complaint.
Place.
No, that's
so if I think of a controller that kind of works with everything, then the GameCube controller comes close. But, like, I don't want to play Super Metroid on that thing, you know, and I don't want to play like Link to the Past or something, or like a kind of like a Twitch-based platforming game, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm somewhere between the Super Nintendo controller and the WaveBird as my favorites of all time. But of course, if I want Super Nintendo, then I'm losing out. Fine, the WaveBird. Fine.
The Super Nintendo, the Super NES controller is so iconic, right?
Okay, you say something bad about Super Nintendo.
No, I like it, but when you hold it now, the shape is not ergonomic, right? It's like you're holding a pill from Dr. Mario or something. It's like it's the wrong shape for hands.
But we're talking about the best controller of all time here. Right?
Yeah,
This is why I do like the Wii U Pro Controller. Because I think it's awesome. I think it's got a great D-pad.
You like, but it's not your favorite of all time.
I think it's up there.
Yeah.
I think it's got a great D-pad. I think it's got great sticks. It's got great triggers.
The sticks should be reversed on the right. It's like they did it to match the gamepad, but also to say, hey, we realized the Xbox 360 controller was really good, so we can't do the same thing.
It's got 90 hours of battery life.
Which, by the way, is really derivative of Nintendo design.
Greg and I got in an argument about the Wii U Pro Controller quite recently, and his argument to me was, and I'm just going to you know, sort of sum this up, because he's not here to defend himself, and so I shouldn't talk too much about this. But he said, you're just mad because this is the controller where they stopped trying to be different.
That's true.
And I'm like, well, yeah, but you know what? Everyone else's controller design came from the Super Nintendo.
That's what
They're
I said.
All from that. Yeah. Like, that is the only, I was the like, only exception might be Microsoft's.
Nintendo is allowed to steal even. Back a little bit because they've been getting their shit robbed for years. For years. They invented so many things that ended up in every major controller.
Yeah. No one's taking the gamepad, no.
I just think the Pro Controller was more of a cop-out in that they had the chance to innovate with something on it. You know, when I play PS4 now and you have the touch screen, all these like little things that they added to it that make it special and stand out, it's kind of sad to see how restrained the Pro Controller is, right?
Yeah.
And I wish it had a little bit more personality to it. And I wish the sticks were reversed on the right.
So my thing was specifically as well, I think the GameCube controller design was a really good design. It was two buttons short, right? It didn't have a select button, and it didn't have an extra bumper button at the top.
That was
top.
A big deal.
No, it had that was a problem for third. It only had one.
The dumb
Z
little
button.
The dumb little button.
Z. The Z button. Little baby there was Z. Only one. There weren't two Zs. Now they have ZL and ZR, which, by the way, you shouldn't label your controller that way. I think that's bad. I do. Like, how? So press the ZR button. If someone tells you that, or you're like, wait, what? I don't know what that is.
I mean, dude, on the Xbox One controller, they had to write the names of the buttons upside down. Because for years, they were the other way around. So now when they say press the L2, people tilt the thing up and they look at it.
Well, they get away with the same thing, I guess, right? Because it's RB and LB, you know, for left bumper, right bumper. Yeah. But anyway,
Z,
I feel like...
By the way, it's really interesting because Z was supposed to be the third... No, Z was supposed to be the third dimension, right? Like it was,
and it was a lock-on.
Underneath the N64, and you're controlling 3D space with it, right?
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the N64 controller, by the way.
Well, in hindsight, it's an oddity, but it was cool when it came out.
I thought it was
okay
great
when it came out.
I thought it was great for. I mean, because
we gotta let them finish.
But no, it's interesting that concept of the Z trigger turned into a shoulder button.
Which
is like really now you're saying Z1 and Z2 and or ZL and ZR, and you're not really using it for three-dimensional control, and like it's kind of silly now.
Okay. Sorry, you were going to
say. No, I was going to say, I thought the Z trigger worked really well on the N64 because it was sort of synonymous with that era of first-person shooters that were happening at the time, like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark.
It
felt like a gun trigger, you know? So it had that. I don't think it should have been brought out to the shoulder of a GameCube controller later.
Well, I think the GameCube controller design was iconic and special and good in its time. I just think they could have improved on it. I think you could have added the two buttons, maybe even if you wanted to put a home button on there, go right ahead, and add an extra Z if that's what it took. But I felt like the layout was just right. You had the really big A button, you had the X and Y kind of surrounding it. It just felt right, and that's something that, and it was an improvement on the Super Nintendo design.
Whereas
that's the design that everyone adopted, and Nintendo just kind of said, yeah, well, we did that and everyone took it, now we're gonna do something different. And then the N64 controller, like, I hated the separated C buttons. I just thought it was okay for cameras because that's what they were sort of used for. But then you play emulated games and you're trying to play the Ocarina in Virtual Console on Wii, and you're like, wait, which one is what?
Yeah.
Oh, God. And you could use the C stick for
but
that.
But how cool
to be
was
fair.
That? How
the
cool
nipple,
was
they called it?
I love the concept of designing a controller around the functions of your game. And they rightfully said, hey, on consoles, you're going to need a way to control the camera. They didn't think of a stick as intuitive camera control. They thought, hey, left and right, you swing the camera, you zoom in, you zoom out. And then they said, oh, but what about people who love the D-pad? It's like, oh, then you hold it like this on the outer.
Yeah.
Some people held it and tried to press the
weird
Z button from the outside.
Yeah, there's so many styles to choose from to hold.
It was confusing, but it was, I love the concept of saying, what are the kinds of games we're going to make? And here's the controller to support that. And they did that with the Wii too, right?
Uh-huh.
Only then they quickly realized, oh, crap. You know, EA is going to want to make Madden. Activision is going to want to make Call of Duty. Oh, God.
Yeah.
And then
that was,
here are 50 more controllers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that was I think that was the lesson learned from the GameCube era, where it was like, hey, our controller was different than everyone else's. And that caused a problem for third parties when it came to making games, because you had two less buttons to work with.
Fewer.
Fewer buttons to work with. I'm sorry, just one last thing.
Sure.
I think also on the GameCube, they also designed, I mean, I think the Nintendo 64, the GameCube, and even the Wii, Nintendo was really good at designing games around their own controllers, because in the GameCube era especially, I felt like a lot of games took really good advantage, first party ones, Smash being a great example of that. Smash Melee just absolutely worked perfectly with the Melee controller. Yeah. I mean, with the GameCube controller so well, in fact, that I don't think they can ever get rid of it now.
Yeah.
You know?
As you can see now.
That ghost is going to chase them forever now. But one of the things they did stop doing around, after the GameCube and the N64 was they ditched the candy-colored button thing. Like, colorful buttons used to be on all their controllers, right?
I like
those. And it just went away. I liked it, too. I thought it was great until I started playing games like Resident Evil 4 or Resident Evil Remake, which were, like, dark, gritty, violent games. And you look down and you'd be like,
hit the yellow thing
with the purple button. Yeah, like the jelly beans on the side. You're playing a murder game with jelly beans. It was really funny.
The rainbow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I like how Xbox pulled it off, though. Yeah, the Xbox has it's kind of like glassy, marbly looking. I thought that was cool. There was a good in between. Yeah. I always remember I played the Super Famicom, which had the colored buttons. You guys had light purple and dark purple. Ugh.
It was weird.
That was awful. Why did they do that?
And then after a few years, it all turned yellow.
Yeah. Oh.
Same with the console. Right. They just turned.
There's a great article on that if you look on the internet. Just saying it was like a mixture, imperfect mixture of the flame retardant chemical in the plastic.
Oh, is that what it was?
That's what it was.
Dreamcast is the worst one.
Oh, you don't turn yellow?
Oh, God.
Yours turn yellow?
I have a bright yellow one. I bet they changed the plastic. I have a bright yellow.
So I'm going to say my controller. We've been talking all this time. I never said which controller I'd settle on. Yeah. I think I'm going to pick Super Nintendo. I feel like the Super Nintendo controller is the best controller in Nintendo. It was so good, in fact, that everyone has followed suit since, and that design is still relevant today. I think a lot of people forget where that design came from. That was a Nintendo-made idea. And, okay, don't get me wrong. Sony added two analog sticks on it. Microsoft improved on it a little more by offsetting them, right, so that one was higher than the other, and that made it really comfortable for first-person shooters. And even now, the PlayStation 4 controller, I love what they did to what Sony did with that controller was really smart. It is a great controller.
But even for your giant hands, the Super NES controller
was giant when I was a kid, man. Oh, my God. All right, but I think I would settle on that. So, folks, you're listening. That is this week's question of the week. What is the best Nintendo controller of all time? Please email NVC@IGN.com and let us know your responses. In the subject line, please type the letters QOTW:controller.
Nice.
Just so it's easier to find your response.
I want to see if anybody says Virtual Boy, because it had a weird-ass controller.
They solved the problem that did not need to be solved, which was that left-handed people did not need a D-pad on the right. Like, what was that about?
Are you left-handed?
I'm not.
Oh, okay.
Are
you left-handed?
No.
So
it was a Super Nintendo controller with two bananas hanging off of it. It was just an SNES pad with these giant.
It was Oculus before.
It was like a wheelbarrow.
It was the PlayStation 3 controller. Remember the concept ones?
The banana,
The batarang?
The boomerang.
Oh, man, that thing. I'll never forget when I saw that in a magazine. I was like, you're going to control it with that?
Yeah.
What is it?
I was like, somebody's going to throw that at somebody else's head.
I wish a third party would have convinced them to let him make a third party controller in that shape.
I was just thinking that. I'm actually kind of amazed that nothing like that ever really came out. Just a sort of fan service.
Somebody was like, we got to hide that. Get out of here.
I'm sure one guy at Mad Cats was like, oh, I got an idea. And they're like, get out.
We're not welcome.
Not here at Mad Cats. Are you crazy?
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, I hope you guys, listeners, enjoyed Nintendo Voice Chat this week. We are a weekly podcast on IGN that talks only about Nintendo, obviously, as you can tell. But here at IGN, we have a whole family of podcasts that you can jump in on, right? One's about Sony, Microsoft, movies, etc. We also have great articles and features here as well. Also, if you like Nintendo Voice Chat and you love to write reviews, man, do I have a pitch for you. Please go over to iTunes and write a review about Nintendo Voice Chat. Let us know what you think. Actually, I want to put out there, we've had about 30 or 40 reviews, I think, since we started asking.
Awesome. Yeah.
And most of them have been really good. A lot of folks really like the show. We've had a couple of low comment ones. If you are going to leave a low star, let us know why.
Yeah.
I think that's the more important feedback there. Like, what is it about the show that you're not feeling? Let us know. I read them.
Yeah.
Yeah. We check them all the time.
Do you get brownie points if you work the words, get the thing into your review in a clever way?
No special attention for that. But you can talk about how old Pear is.
You can do that.
I'm staying out of this war.
Yeah, please do that. All right. So thank you very much again. Next week, I guess we'll try to do something special because it's our last show before the Big E3. and all the crazy stuff's going to happen. Also, I want to let you guys know up front right now, loyal listeners, I am not sure if we're going to have a show during E3 or not, just because the three of us are going to be all over the place, and getting us in one place at one time that's quiet might be kind of hard. But then again,
we'll
Pear is now the GM of IGN, so he can make it happen. So make sure you tweet at...
Pair IGN.
And let them know that you want an NVC the week of E3.
Yep.
You can also reach out to Brian Altano.
Agent Bizzle.
And let him know what you think of either Up at Noon or some of his great and fabulous points that he makes on the show.
Thank you.
Yep.
Such as the 10 best video game cats.
Yeah, I never did that.
No, what was what you just about? Did a really crazy one. What was that? Was it dogs? No, that wasn't you.
That wasn't me.
Who did the dogs?
No, I grew up Pear.
That was Destiny.
You stopped paying attention. I don't do that junk anymore, all right? I did the top five Batmobiles to make love in.
That's what it was. That's what I saw.
All right, and you can tweet at me, at Jose_Otero on Twitter, and let me know what you think of the show. Again, don't forget, email... NVC@IGN.com with any feedback or the question of the week.
And just
Mario Kart.
Aren't you doing a tournament? When you listen to this, we do have a tournament. Check the show notes on IGN. I've already tweeted a photo of it. It's really not that hard to find, but I'll make sure that our social team puts it back out there for you to see.
And just to reiterate, if we can't do a show during E3, which is possible, we're going to be doing tons of coverage there. Tons of, like, it's going to feel like mini NVCs. The three of us will probably be on camera talking about all the crazy stuff Nintendo's doing, checking out all the new games, doing previews, hands-on, review, not reviews. Everything we can. Right there on the spot.
And I think we'll do a post show after Nintendo's conference too, or pre-show.
Yeah, there's
so you'll catch us in various weird
I'm just trying to
places.
Warn them now, because I'm already expecting a barrage of tweets like, where's NVC that week? And I don't know for sure yet.
Great.
Yeah. So cool. Thank you very much for listening, and we will be back next week. Same time, same place.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.